It's the morning show. I'm Shereen Seward in for Kate Archer Kent. Accessory dwelling units are secondary living spaces. They share the building lot of a larger primary home. They can't be bought or sold separately, but they're often used to provide additional income through rent or to house a family member. But what are the pros and cons? Join in with your questions about this housing model, which is gaining popularity in Wisconsin and beyond. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Sue Thering is the executive director of the Madison-based Design Coalition Institute. It promotes affordable, environmental, and economic justice in housing and urban design. So, Sue, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate being here to talk about this important topic.
Kurt Paulson is a professor of urban planning at UW-Madison, where he focuses on housing policy and land use. Welcome back to you as well.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Kurt, accessory dwelling units are getting more attention around the country. We're hearing about this a lot more. Can you explain what this housing really looks like?
Yeah, so accessory dwelling unit is kind of a mouthful.
It is.
But the main, it sure is, and it's sometimes hard to say. So sometimes we say ADU or granny flat, and it's basically on a single family property where the main house is a single family house. It is a smaller secondary unit, which, as you said in your intro, could either be rented out or could be a place for a family member or a friend to live. So the term accessory really means that it's a secondary, smaller unit on the same parcel as a primary main house.
I was trying to explain this to my husband last night, and he goes, so basically it's a she shed. And I said, no, it's not a she shed. It's got like a kitchen and a bathroom. It's not just a, right? It doesn't have to have all that stuff.
In order to be classified as a dwelling unit, both under zoning and building codes, it would have to be a separate cooking, bathroom, and a separate entrance. So that's usually what makes it different than just if your mother-in-law lives in the guest room in your house, that's not a separate dwelling unit because you don't have a separate entrance and you don't have separate cooking facilities.
Right.
I know it gets technical, but it's the idea of a second dwelling unit, second complete dwelling unit for human habitation.
Sue, so you've been a champion of this kind of living for years, and I understand you recently moved into one in Rochester, New York. What is it like? What's living in one like?
Oh, yes, you're right. I have been a champion of this for many, many years at this point. And some years ago, my son and his wife heard me talking about it often enough. They said, we want you to move into one with us and help with the kids, of course, the three grandkids. We looked around for a long time and we found a place south of Rochester, New York, and it has a granny flat apartment above the garage. It has a separate entrance that opens to the outside, and then it does have another door to the upstairs of their house. And I have my three grandkids coming in and out whenever they want. However, they do knock, and there's a lock on the door.
Okay.
And we respect each other's privacy, but it is wonderful. It is just a mutually helpful. I help them. They help me. I enjoy the kids. Mom and dad go out on date night every once in a while. I can help the kids with homework. They work in the garden with me, which is delightful. No, it's a wonderful living opportunity.
Sounds like it's working for your family. We're talking about backyard apartments and demand for more housing in Wisconsin. Our guests are Sue Thering of Design Coalition Institute and Kurt Paulson, who is a professor of urban planning at UW-Madison. Sue, who might benefit from living in a granny flat? Obviously, it's working for you. I mean, so in your situation, it's a grandparent situation, but what other types of situations might this benefit?
Sure. Sure. Yeah. So I've been working in land use planning and housing for decades at this point. And the idea of accessory dwelling units, ADUs, has come to the top again and again and again. And I have kind of focused in on working with local government, local municipalities, to help them thoughtfully update their local codes to be able to allow for, because I have seen it again and again, the uncle who's a wounded veteran who maybe needs a little help, the adult child with developmental disabilities who can live semi-independently, an aging relative, or a homeowner who now is an empty nester. They're living in a 3 or 4 bedroom house that has a lot of stairs, and they recognize they're not going to be able to live there for too much longer and get around and do the upkeep. So they build themselves a little in-law apartment for themselves, and then they rent out the house either to their kids or their grandkids or the neighbors next door's grandkids or another family that is looking for, a family-sized house. So it just cuts across so many of the diverse housing needs. And that's why I have really been a champion for this for quite a long time.
Kurt, we know that there is a severe housing shortage for working adults and for young families. A recent study by Forward Analytics found baby boomers, they want to stay in their homes as they retire. And this report found that Wisconsin needs to add about 140,000 housing units this decade. Do you see this type of dwelling as something that could help meet this demand, help stem this issue that we're facing in Wisconsin?
Right. So as you pointed out, both nationwide and in Wisconsin, we have a real housing shortage. And the housing shortage is really of all different types of units at all different price points. So, of course, an accessory dwelling unit is a small portion of the housing market. But given how tight our housing market is all across the state, this will help to loosen up some of the supply restrictions. No one single housing type and no one single zoning or planning policy will solve the housing crisis, but a lot of them all together over a long period of time can. And to Sue's point, the other type of person this could help is a first-time home buyer or a younger family that might be stretching to afford a home because home prices are really expensive. So sometimes we think of accessory dwelling units as, sometimes they're called the mortgage helper. If I can rent out the accessory dwelling unit, I can generate an additional income, which helps me pay the mortgage. So the other thing we have to say, however, is that most people who live in accessory dwelling units are family members or friends. So it's not providing that deeply subsidized affordable housing that we need everywhere, but it's part of the solution for sure.
Kurt, are you seeing a lot more of this type of housing constructed in Wisconsin? Is this a major trend?
It's not yet a major trend in Wisconsin. It is a major trend in expensive coastal states, but you're starting to see it creep its way towards Wisconsin. So California and Oregon as states have passed laws that make it so much easier to build an accessory dwelling unit. And there you've seen accessory dwelling units take off. But in Wisconsin, we still have a number of our major cities where there are significant regulatory burdens. Either the zoning does not allow an accessory dwelling unit, or it might allow it, but subject it to a conditional use process or other sort of kind of lengthy and time-consuming processes. So I think what we've learned from other states is when you make it easier to build accessory dwelling units, you get more of them because there's clearly a demand for some portion of homeowners to build or to acquire properties that have this second unit.
We're talking about accessory dwelling units, what most people would call a granny flat or a mother-in-law apartment or a tiny house. Kurt Paulson, a professor of urban planning at UW-Madison, and Sue Thering, the executive director of the Design Coalition Institute, stay with us. And you can join in with your questions or your comments at any time. 800-642-1234. I'm Shereen Seward. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. The Morning Show. I'm Shereen Seward. Granny flats, mother-in-law apartments. The accessory dwelling unit goes by a number of names, but the idea is the same, a secondary dwelling on the lot of a single-family home. Have you considered this on your own property? Call in with your questions about ADUs and share your experiences with us. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Sue Thering is the executive director of the Design Coalition Institute, and Kurt Paulson is a professor of urban planning at UW-Madison, here to discuss this. We have Marcus with us now from Milwaukee. Hi, Marcus. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. So I find it interesting because I'm 43 years old. I've lived in Milwaukee my whole life. And there's quite a number of these where you actually have like a smaller house built behind on lots in the inner city. And so I just find it strange that now we're having to work to change the codes back to what they were when that was working. I guess everything that's old is new again.
Yeah, no kidding. Thanks, Marcus. Sue, I'm curious about your thoughts about that. You know, why is it that we kind of went away from that model, and now we're trying to get back, turn back the clock, so to speak?
Yeah. Milwaukee does have a section that has some really sweet. I think in Milwaukee they call them the back house or something abbreviated like that. I think Kurt might be able to talk a little bit more about the history, but from my understanding, it was that. There was some heavy-handed zoning applied nationwide in the wake of the Industrial Revolution, when there was so much, pollution and squalor and tenements and overcrowding. And so they just all of a sudden said, okay, only single-family houses. They kind of went overboard. But I bet Kurt would have a little bit more insight on that.
Sure, Kurt. What do you have to say about that? I mean, what is the history of this,
yeah.
And why did we turn away from it only to go back again?
So Marcus is exactly correct. And when people say, "Wow, accessory dwelling units, that's weird, that's strange," what Marcus would point out is this is how we used to always build cities. You know, we used to allow. I think in Milwaukee they're also called Polish flats sometimes. And particularly in denser urban neighborhoods, this is how people were able to afford housing, afford a home ownership, but also to take in relatives or, other immigrants and provide housing opportunities. So again, in the 1930s, when the United States began to adopt zoning nationwide, there was a very strong preference and kind of political idea of protecting the single family, nuclear family home from all other land uses. And so a lot of our housing challenges stem from that. We used to build neighborhoods that had a variety of housing types, a variety of price points, and therefore would have a diversity of people, both in terms of age and income. But we really adopted a suburban style zoning model across the country, even in major cities, and that would be single family only. And that really limits options and drives up prices. So the movement towards accessory dwelling units is part of a broader movement that says, let's build more diverse style and type of housing in every neighborhood like we used to 100 years ago.
Hmm. Well, let's talk about cost. How much does it cost, Kurt, for someone to build these? Can it be really expensive?
Yes. So your costs are going to vary based on the size of the unit and the quality of the construction and whether it is attached to the existing dwelling unit or whether it is detached. And part of what's driving costs is construction costs overall are expensive in the last couple of years, up 35% since before COVID. And there's a shortage of skilled contractors and workers. So the rule of thumb, and again, anyone considering this will have to meet with a contractor or two and get some price estimates. But for an approximately 500 square foot accessory dwelling unit, your average construction costs in Wisconsin will run from about $165 a square foot to upwards of $185 a square foot. So that means somewhere between $85 to even up to $110,000. So it's not cheap, mm-hmm. Because since it is a dwelling unit intended for people to live, you have to meet all of the standards in the building code. And that includes plumbing, electrical, HVAC, insulation, and all of the things that go into just making a quality home.
Sue, how about financing? Are folks able to get financing to build a granny flat?
Well, we have had some good news on that corner of the ADU world just in the last year or so. A lot of the work I was doing was working with local municipalities and community groups and nonprofits, only to run into financing problems. And we learned that it was what's known as the secondary housing market, which local banks and credit unions, local lenders will write mortgages and write loans. And then they bundle those mortgages and they sell them to the secondary housing market, which is Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, among others. And Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac just had all kinds of regulations that, you know, we won't, you know, accept a mortgage that has an accessory dwelling unit unless XYZ, and it was just lists and lists. But just within the last year or so, both Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have updated their regulations as far as buying mortgages with accessory dwelling units. I think that's going to open up the likelihood, just wide open. That was like the biggest, in my experience, I'm sure Kurt can talk to this, in my experience, that was the biggest roadblock that I found in the years I was working with accessory dwelling units.
We're talking about affordable housing in Wisconsin, the idea of building more backyard apartments. Our guests are Sue Thering of Design Coalition Institute and Kurt Paulson, a professor of urban planning at UW-Madison. Kurt, what do you think about the financing options? Will they improve for people who are looking to build these kinds of apartments?
Well, I hope they improve. Having interest rates above 6% for a mortgage is a lot more painful for a homeowner considering this than when mortgages were at 3%. And as Sue pointed out, the federal mortgage agencies, Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, have begun to loosen up some of their requirements, but they're still pretty strict. And it's still a significant challenge for a homeowner who currently owns a home and wants to build an ADU to get a loan in order to build it, because you know, this gets a little bit into the weeds of how mortgages work, but if I have an existing mortgage on my house, I can't really alter that. So if my existing mortgage is 3%, and a lot of people have mortgages from when rates were low, I can't borrow new money at that 3%. The new money I would want to borrow to build the accessory dwelling unit would be at probably 7, 8, or 9%. And that starts to really become cost prohibitive. So there are some national reports and agencies working to encourage Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to loosen up their underwriting standards. But from their perspective, if I'm a homeowner and I'm going to build an accessory dwelling unit, I am in essence becoming a landlord and a commercial property developer. But sometimes the market is unproven, and it's unclear whether the homeowner has the capacity to manage rental property. Mm-hmm. And so that potential income is going to be discounted in a way that it would not from a experienced commercial developer. I hope that makes sense.
It does. And, you know, Kurt, I guess I'm wondering then, is it a good investment ever for the homeowner to engage in this?
Well, what we see in the data is that most people who build an accessory dwelling unit do it with the intent of providing housing for a family member or a friend.
So it's not necessarily about the money.
Right. If you just do it on a strict investment cash flow basis, given how uncertain the income is, and given that you have to pay additional insurance, you're going to have to cover utilities, you have to be familiar with landlord-tenant law, you are not going to generate a significant investment return and income in building a unit. The other thing we see in the data is people will build a unit and want to rent it out to maybe a teacher or a nurse or someone who's a young working professional to help them get a start in life or to help them mm-hmm. Live closer to work. So there's a lot of reasons people build these, probably not primarily for some big financial return, because the financial returns are not certain.
Thank you. Amid calls across Wisconsin for more affordable housing, we're taking a closer look at the idea of building more backyard apartments. They're also known as granny flats. Our guests are UW-Madison Urban Planning Professor Kurt Paulson and Sue Thering, Executive Director of the Design Coalition Institute based in Madison. She lives in a granny flat in Rochester, New York. You can be part of this conversation as well by calling in with your questions or your comments on accessory dwelling units. 800-642-1234. I'm Shereen Seward. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Morning Show. I'm Shereen Seward in for Kate Archer-Kent. Accessory dwelling units are being used to generate rental income or house additional family members on the same single-family lot. I'm curious if this is happening in your neighborhood. You can join in with your questions or share your experience with us at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Sue Thering is the Executive Director of the Design Coalition Institute based in Madison, and Kurt Paulson is an Associate Professor of Planning and Landscape Architecture at UW-Madison. They are with us for the rest of the hour. We have Aaron with us from Madison now. Thanks for calling, Aaron.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for the show. It really sparks a lot of ideas and thinking. So I live on the isthmus, and I am wondering what the tax implications would be for, you know, just as part of thinking about what would it mean to add a dwelling unit or now or into the future, and how your property taxes are impacted. And okay. I can take my call off the air, and thank you.
Thank you, Aaron. Kurt, maybe you're the best one to answer that question. What are the property tax implications?
Right. So, and again, we want to make clear, a lot of people are considering this, and before you do it, a little bit of home buyer education to understand the tax implications, what it means for insurance and finances is helpful. And there are courses available, and we expect that as more people are interested, you could design additional training. So on the property tax side, because it is an improvement to real property, the assessor will come out and determine how much additional value of your property is gained by building an accessory dwelling unit. It may be less than the full construction cost. That's one of the challenges, is because appraisers and assessors have to consider how much additional value the accessory dwelling unit will add to the property. And because your property value will go up, then your property taxes will go up. It's also important to say, if you rent to someone who is not a family member, you're potentially liable for income tax on the net rental income. And your accountant can help you figure out how to calculate net rental income, because it would be the income you receive from rent minus, you know, a portion of your property taxes, insurance, utilities, and other sort of costs.
Okay.
So there are tax implications, mm-hmm. because it's both income and an improvement to property.
Liz called.
That's a great question.
Yeah, it is a great question. Thanks for answering that. Liz called from Dodgeville with a question. Liz asks, are there any companies that provide prefab accessory dwelling units that are good quality and energy efficient? She's wondering about this outside of manufactured homes and mobile home units. She says it seems like this would be a large market. Sue, do you know anything about that?
I know there are places across the country that are gearing up, if not already, taking orders for prefab. I don't know about the specifics about energy efficiency, and I don't know what's available in Wisconsin. Although I have to say, very few properties unless you get like a crane that can pick it up and get it over the primary house, or if you have a large enough lot that the truck can, you know, back in and get it into your backyard.
Kurt, what do you think about that? I mean, how difficult is it to get a prefab unit into, you know, into your yard?
Well, Liz makes a great point. And in California, where the state passed a law in 2016, which says that basically accessory dwelling units have to be permitted by every city in every single family residential zoning district, you had an explosion of accessory dwelling units, 60,000 plus a year. And then you develop these markets and companies where California has a number of interesting companies that do build prefab ADUs. You can go online and order your ADU, and it'll be constructed in a factory to a high degree of energy efficiency in the building code, and they'll deliver it to your property. We don't yet have that in Wisconsin. In many ways, it's a chicken and egg problem, which is you're not going to see a company building factory-built ADUs until the market really develops and there's kind of a guaranteed market. Mm-hmm. But it's a real potential interesting technological solution, because a homeowner might not want to deal with 6 or 9 months of construction. If you could order one, it shows up on a crane or on a truck, and they plop it down and connect the utilities. That's a real service. So, yes, there are great companies doing this, none in Wisconsin yet.
We're talking about backyard apartments and the demand for more housing in Wisconsin. Our guests today are Sue Thering of Design Coalition Institute and Kurt Paulson, a professor of urban planning at UW-Madison. Dee is with us now from Bayfield. Hi, Dee.
Hi there. Good morning to your guests, and thank you for taking my call. I have somewhat of a different question regarding ADUs. What I envision with my son is a small, a sort of a tiny house for myself. I'm an elder, and sort of in close proximity to a tiny house for my other son, and my other son has a larger home and larger property to accommodate us. And then we thought about, oh, maybe we could have Airbnbs. We live in Bayfield, Wisconsin, which is, you know, has a high season that starts in Memorial Day and ends Labor Day. Lots of tourists come into our little town and require housing, temporary housing. My question is, I have some reservations regarding moving out and moving back in, mm-hmm. and moving back out and back and forth and back and forth. And what are the emotional kinds of ramifications of trying to sort of multitask my dwelling?
Sure. Sue, I'm going to ask you to address this question, because you live in one of these, right? So, I mean, what would you think about Dee's predicament, thinking about building this home and then moving out for the summer during the high season?
Well, that's really interesting. Kind of coincidentally, there is a total solar eclipse that's going to be prime over Rochester, New York next year. And everybody I know around here is, you know, trying to figure out how to rent out their room because all the hotels are already filled. And we were somewhat joking about renting out my granny flat and then just rooming in with my son and his wife and their three kids, you know, getting a blow up mattress for the weekend or whatever. I don't think we're going to do that. But I think the answer to Dee's question really would be, how well do you get along with the people that you'd be rooming in with during high season in Bayfield? If it would be easygoing and casual, there's, you know, something to be said about that extra income. But if it's going to be, you know, tensions or uncomfortable, or, you know, you're not going to be speaking to each other after the high season, you know, you don't want to take that risk.
Yeah, a lot to think about for sure. These accessory dwelling units are not without controversy in some communities. Kurt, what are some common objections that people raise to their neighbors building these units?
Right. So Dee's previous question actually raises one of the biggest ones we hear, particularly in a tourist area, or like in Madison, where you have a lot of students and a concern about renting out an ADU for a Badger football game. Right? So one of the biggest concerns is that neighbors fear that these will become Airbnb units, right? That's mm-hmm. that's a broader question about neighbors often oppose ADUs because of concerns about character of the neighborhood in terms of traffic and noise and parking and those sort of quality of life concerns. And that's understandable. And that's why actually a lot of cities that allow accessory dwelling units will treat them differently if they are designed for short-term rentals versus long-term rental, or treat them differently if the person occupying the accessory dwelling unit is a relative as opposed to a renter, right? So ADUs are this really interesting question because we have this both cultural and kind of political aesthetic about a single family only neighborhood. And an accessory dwelling unit is really a gentle and very small density increase. And every code I've seen requires that the architecture be exactly similar to the principal house. Mm-hmm. But as with any change in a neighborhood, people fear traffic and parking and quality of life concerns. And what I would say, and what Sue has said all the time to municipalities, is you can have good regulations that balance this need for more housing and accessory dwelling units with some of these quality of life and design concerns that neighbors have. So cities have been successful in managing these trade-offs.
Sue, I'd like to get your reaction to some of those objections too. Are they valid?
Oh, certainly. To an extent, of course. And so different municipalities will have different circumstances, even in different block levels in a community. There'd be a neighborhood where parking really, really would be a problem. And then they would have to do, you know, some accommodation for parking or, you know, there'd have to be a parking space on the property, which usually is a deal breaker because most dense neighborhood properties just will not have room for another car. But in some cases, they'll say, okay, if you're in, you know, two blocks of public transportation, a bus line, or then you don't have to have an extra parking space because we're going to encourage whoever's living in that ADU not to actually own a car. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of micro level ways to address some of these concerns. The biggest one that I think helps alleviate the concerns, and I've seen it almost in any, and Kurt can tell me if he's seen different, but the owner has to live on the property. Either they live in the primary house or they live in the accessory dwelling unit. And having that in is a very relatively small regulation that then dispels a lot of the concerns because that homeowner isn't going to want noisy neighbors or, you know, other detriments to their quality of life. So that one little kind of regulation helps dispel a lot of the concern.
We're talking about accessory dwelling units with Sue Thering and Kurt Paulson. Sue is the executive director of the Design Coalition Institute, which is based in Madison. Kurt is an urban planning professor at UW-Madison. Still time for your questions or thoughts about ADUs, also commonly known as granny flats or mother-in-law apartments, 800-642-1234. I'm Shereen Seward. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Show. I'm Shereen Seward. What factors are leading more people to build secondary housing units to generate income or house family members? And are they affordable options? Join in with your questions or share your experience with us, 800-642-1234. Email ideas@wpr.org. Sue Thering is Executive Director of the Design Coalition Institute. Kurt Paulson is an Associate Professor of Planning and Landscape Architecture at UW-Madison, and they stay with us. James sent us an email at WPR.org/mornings and says, since 99% of all new apartment developments are done with TIF, tax increment financing, he's wondering, this is an interesting question, he's wondering if this might be something that would be extended to individuals. This is normally for developers. So, Kurt, do you think that TIF financing could potentially be extended to people who want to build these backyard apartments?
Right. So I don't think James is right that 99% of all apartments are constructed with TIF.
Mm-hmm.
But what cities across the country, and even in Wisconsin, I'll give an example in a minute, are doing is recognizing that they can remove the regulatory barriers, and they can provide training and education and technical assistance to homeowners. But financing is still a barrier. If you have to borrow a lot of money at an expensive interest rate, it's just not affordable. So cities have various sorts of grants and loan programs. The city of Madison recently had a number of loans to help people construct accessory dwelling units. That was very popular. It was a low interest rate. So there's no reason why a city in Wisconsin could not use kind of what's sometimes called small cap TIF to provide a better loan or a low interest loan to a homeowner who wanted to fix up their property or improve their property or build an accessory dwelling unit. You know, it gets complicated just because you're attaching a different type of loan to a property, but there's certainly cities across the country that have used TIF or other city financing tools to help homeowners build ADUs. And then the secondary question is, would you require that the homeowner make that unit affordable? Madison just required minimal training and make sure that the homeowner had fair housing training and landlord training and would agree to, regulate the tenant in terms of noise and neighborhood impact. So yes, there are plenty of financing tools. So if a city decided this is what they want to do, they could use TIF, they could use general revenue, various other sorts of funding sources to help people overcome the financial barriers.
Sue, I want to ask you about this too, about the financial barriers. And what programs are you aware of, if you are, that would help homeowners who want to do this? Or what would you like to see happen?
Well, what I would really like to, and I've been working a little bit on this, is getting the information in the hands of our local agents at our local lenders. You know, a lot of them don't know that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have updated their regulations. And, you know, so some professional development for our local banks and credit unions, you know, so that they know and even can, you know, develop loan products and programs to promote that. It's good for their business. It's good for their communities. But I think there is something, and maybe Kurt can talk a little bit to this. I have had concerns because getting loans if the accessory dwelling unit is allowed by right or by conditional use, that there is going to be some more difficulty if the accessory dwelling unit is only allowed by conditional use. And Kurt, of course, is the expert on what's the difference between by right and conditional use. And I wonder if he would want to jump in on that.
Sure. Kurt, what's the difference?
Right. So within zoning, if the whole idea of making accessory dwelling units easier to build and more simple is that if you make it a use by right, then if a homeowner submits plans that conform with the zoning code, then you just get a zoning permit and a building permit. You don't need a public hearing. You don't need to go before the plan commission. You don't need design review. If it's a conditional use, then that triggers a public hearing, a public process before the plan commission, and your neighbors can show up and, say yes, say no. And, you know, it's already a kind of challenging process for most homeowners because they're not experts in land development. Then if you add on a lot of uncertainty and a public process, you can understand why in cities where it's a conditional use, you don't see many accessory dwelling units. Right. So the whole idea, and Sue talks about this a lot, is if you decide as a city you want these units, make it simple and make it easy to build. Some cities even hired architects to pre-design floor plans and building plans, and then a homeowner could just, if you build that, it's automatically approved. You get your zoning permit, you get your building permit within 60 days, not a lot of hassle, not a lot of delay.
We're talking about affordable housing in Wisconsin, the idea of building more backyard apartments with Sue Thering of Design Coalition Institute and Kurt Paulson, professor of urban planning at UW-Madison. Sue, boy, we only have about a minute and a half left together, but I want to talk about those pre-approved plans for backyard cottages. Some cities are doing them. San Jose, California, Eugene, Oregon. Residents can get those plans for free. What's the advantage there, and would you like to see more of that?
Oh, I think it's brilliant, and I would encourage any municipality to work with their local design groups, architects, design build firms, to figure out what they need to be able to produce the plans and how to disseminate them with due credit to the original designer and with affordability for the homeowner. An average homeowner would be scared to death to sit down with an architect who's, you know, could, you know, be charging $200 an hour to talk to them. You know, most homeowners just have never done anything like that. And it's really quite intimidating. I think it's a brilliant idea, and it should happen everywhere. If I can just, if you don't mind, back up just a little bit.
Sure.
About the difference between conditional and by right.
Sure. And briefly, we only have about 20 seconds left.
Okay, very quickly. There are conditions where, say, the tenant has to be a blood relative. Now, if a lender sees that, then what they're going to say, well, what happens when we sell this house? Who's going to buy it if they don't have a blood relative? So, you know, that's why, you know, the fewer conditions you put on, the more likely you're going to get ADUs built in your community.
I want to thank you both. I feel like we could have talked for another hour about this whole thing. It's a fascinating subject, and thank you so much for sharing all of this with us. Kurt Paulson is a professor of planning and landscape architecture at UW-Madison. Sue Thering is the executive director of the Madison-based Design Coalition Institute, which promotes affordable, environmental, and economic justice in housing and urban design. I'm Shireen Seward. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.